We are honored to have Aga Adnan, who's a Masule Consulgarie Yemen in Iran, and also the Numainde representative of Ansarullah. With that being said, I would like to invite our dear keynote speaker for the evening. This scholar has been studying over here for many years and has been a source of inspiration for many in West. He has tirelessly worked towards his studies, towards in academia, and has been able to inspire many people through his lectures. Without further ado, please welcome Sheikh Farrukh Sakaleshwar with your loudest of salawat, inshallah.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد The Islamic Revolution of Iran is essentially different to other revolutions. And it's very important to try and understand exactly what makes it different. To try to understand that there's a commonality, a synchronicity between the Islamic government and the Islamic revolution. There's a synchronicity with the government of the Holy Messenger, the government of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the governance of Imam Hassan alayhi wasalam. But what is that commonality which they share? What is that synchronicity that this revolution had which makes it so important? It wasn't only the rules and regulations. That's not enough. You imagine the United Kingdom. Imagine that they execute all the rules of Islam under, for example, the likes of Johnson. And all the rules and regulations of Islam are executed in that country. Does that make it an Islamic government? Of course not. Does that make it in synchronicity with the governance of Rasulullah? No. Islamic governance requires much more. The lesson of Ghadir taught us that the nature of and the essence of the enforcer is very important. Who is enforcing Islamic governance? The personality is important. It's of key. It's a key to understanding the nature of revolutions. What I want to say is that this Islamic revolution is a continuation of the messengership and the imamat of the imams. But in what aspect? What did Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi do to earn him that right, to qualify as acting in continuation on the imamat of the imams? This has to be understood. To try and prove this, we first have to look at man. Man's creation, man is a multidimensional entity. Man has a physical dimension, has a semi-immaterial or malakuti dimension. Semi-immaterial, there's no matter, but it has physical attributes. It's like the stuff that our dreams are made out of. One dimension of us is semi-immaterial or malakuti. One dimension is purely immaterial, or Jabaruti. Each of these dimensions of man, there exists food by means of which these dimensions are nourished. The food for our Jabaruti, immaterial dimension, which is Tawheed, it's doctrinal principles, aqa'id. Look, it's immaterial, not even semi-immaterial, like, you know, rational, intelligibles, mathematical principles, aqa'id too. It's the food, aqa'id, Islamic doctrine, Tawheed at its head. It's the food through which we build our immaterial Jabaruti dimension. The food through which we construct and build our Malakuti realm, its actions, especially the noble ethical traits. And the more we incorporate these in our souls, the more stronger our Malakuti dimension will be. And the food for this physical body is obvious. The issue is this: when the question arises as to why do we sin, it's because the Jabaruti realm is compromised. In the Jabaruti realm, we had to incorporate Tawheed and Aqa'id. We had to incorporate the love of Allah, not Hubbu Dunya. If our Jabaruti dimension is compromised, the relationship between these three dimensions is a relationship of cause and effect, according to the philosophers, and zahir and batin, according to the urafa. And therefore, the Jabaruti realm is the cause or batin of the Malakuti realm, which is the cause to the physical. Why is this important? Because if the Jabaruti realm is compromised, you're going to compromise the sequence of dimensions which exist below it. And therefore your Malakuti realm will be compromised. And then your physical, you'll sin. Look. Now, if you succeed though in your Jabaruti dimension, and your aqa'id is incorporated in your heart, you're going to succeed in your Malakuti dimension. You will enact the noble ethical traits, and then you will succeed in the Sharia. There's a relationship here. And when you succeed, the manifestations of these actions and aqa'id may even manifest before you. You may have visions. But there are some people who detach from the affinities, not only of this physical realm, they detach from the affinities of their Malakuti realm. They detach from the fruits of their Aqli Jabaruti realm, and they enter the divine courtyard. That's not a created entity like our immaterial, semi-immaterial, and physical dimensions. It's a divine courtyard. These are the mukhlasin. Mukhlas, it's a past participle. Mukhlis is a present participle. Someone who dedicates their actions for Allah's sake. With the mukhlas, it's someone who slaughters their ego for Allah's sake, their selves for Allah's sake. We can't slaughter ourselves. That's why we can only try to complete our Jabaruti dimensions, Malakuti dimensions, so much so that then we reach a threshold where Allah takes us to the divine courtyard. We can't kill ourselves. And then we become annihilated. Thereafter, your words are Allah's words. Your seeing is Allah's seeing. Your hearing is Allah's hearing. In the Quran, the mukhlaseen are not under the exploitation of shaitan, the mukhlaseen. Why? Because once they've annihilated as mukhlaseen, it's all Allah. There is no ego to make one susceptible to the satanic exploitation. Once you've entered the divine courtyard, all the lower Jabaruti, Malakuti, Nasuti realms, they're all working under the sovereignty of angelic divine forces. The mukhlaseen, this is what happens. It's not them anymore. If you've only reached the Jabaruti realm, it's very good, but still you're susceptible to satanic exploitation. It's only when you become mukhlas and totally detached from these dimensions and enter the divine courtyard, your words are Allah's words. Then that is a true leader. This, such a person, by entering the divine courtyard, to whatever degree, by becoming mukhlas, to whatever degree, they've earned the right to start a phenomenon which is continuing from the imamat of the Holy Prophet and the imams. And this has value. Why? Because it's not their words. It's not their actions. It's coming from Allah. That gives it its right. It doesn't matter if you execute all the rules and regulations of Islam, but the leader is not a mukhlas. There's a problem there. With the mukhlaseen, you're safe. And this is what Imam Khomeini had. People like Imam Khomeini, they come every one or two centuries. They're very unique people. And if you look through his life, his deeds, his actions, his words, you see this level of ikhlas. In Iraq, when he was exiled, when the corrupt Ba'athi regime soldiers would enter the mosque, and when many scholars would rise up and greet and respect those Ba'athi people out of fear, he would remain sitting down. He had no fear. It's Allah's hands. It's Allah's feet. He doesn't act. It's not him. And there are many such stories that we see that a true leader is someone who has to reach this level. And that's why the origins of the revolution are irfani in nature, or mystical in nature, because it goes back to the mukhlaseen. Yes, the mukhlaseen, it's graded. Some people are more mukhlas than others, that's okay. But this is an important condition. Now you may say, what about the present leader? Is he mukhlas? I don't know. But look, in the history of fiqh, 1 century after Sheikh Tusi, for 1 century, fiqh was almost static. Not because fiqh didn't have the means, but the grandeur of Sheikh Tusi was so much that it persisted for 1 century. Imam Khomeini, the likes of him, we can't just replace him with anyone. Whoever succeeds the likes of Imam Khomeini, and for maybe 1 century, leader after leader who comes, they may not be mukhlas, but it's crucial that they follow the protocol of the mukhlas. And that's why our leader is so important, because he follows the mukhlas of the times, dot to dot. Because like that, the revolution will be safeguarded. Now, when you have a mukhlas like Imam Khomeini, an imam, this imam, one of the functions of imamat is to make people reach their potentials. the inner capacity that people have, the imam, and through the imam, these people can reach their utmost potential. One example is Sardar. At 20 years of age, during the imposed war, he was there. And for 40 years, he persisted. He's a fruit of the Maktabi school of Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini's leadership created such an individual, made him reach his potential. And others. You see that with the likes of Sardar, they were yearning to die. They were yearning for martyrdom. قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ هَادُوا إِنْ زَعَمْتُمْ أَنَّكُمْ أَوْلِيَاءُ لِلَّهِ مِنْ دُونِ النَّاسِ فَتَمَنَّوُ الْمَوْتَ إِنْ كُنْتُمْ صَادِقِينَ. If you really think that you are awliya and not others, awliya, not others, then yearn for death. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, when he came, look how many shuhada were given amongst the scholars, amongst other than the scholars. The likes of Dasghib, Qadi Tabatabai, Ashrafi Isfahani, Mutahari, all these people, through the ink of their pen, they became martyred. This has died down today. Not that we don't have enemies inside the country today, but we see a lack. Why is the ink not as threatening as before? The enemies are still there, outside and inside. But also, scholars like Himmat, Bakiri, Kharrazi, all these people. Once Sardar Soleimani said that in Rasht, a few years ago in the north of Iran, there was a big conference. He said that the shuhada such as Himmat and Bakiri and Kharrazi are more of a model for today's youth than a marja taqlid. He said that. Not in fiqh, he added, but in suluk, in their ethics, their sacrificing nature. And he said the reason is because these shuhada, they always said, come. They were heading the battalion. They would be heading the battalion. Look, come. But they were lying at the head. They wouldn't say go. There's a difference between saying come. Sardar is saying this. There's a difference between saying come and saying go. Go, stating go, exclaiming go, ordering a go is not enough. You have to be there. All this was because of the existence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, who made these people what they are. Now, I won't take too much time, but I wanted to read part of Sardar's testament. Sardar Qasim Soleimani, his will, parts of the will were read a few days ago by Sardar Qa'ani. Just want to read a few of these sections and I'll finish, inshallah. Oh Allah, my legs are weak, lifeless, and I don't have the audacity to cross a bridge that traverses through hell. My feet even tremble when crossing a normal bridge, let alone woe upon me being beside your sirat that is narrower than a thread of hair and more cutting than a sword. However, there's a hope that offers me glad tidings that it may be possible that I do not tremble, and that it is possible that I be saved and attain to salvation. With these feet, O Allah, I have taken steps in your haram, and have circulated around your house, and I have made my feet run with verve and joy, barefooted in the haram of your lovers, Bainul Haramain, between the harams of your Hussein and your Abbas. With these feet I have bent down within long trenches, and in defending your religion I have ran, jumped, crawled, cried, laughed, and made others laugh, cried and made others cry. I have fallen down and have risen up. I hope that through these leaps and falls, and by the sanctity of those harams, that you forgive these feet. I have set out in a state of bewilderment onto numerous plains and valleys, out of agitation and being slandered because of being left behind from the caravan of the Shuhada. It is with hope I am journeying from one city to another, from one desert to another, throughout winters and summers. Karim, Habib, I have attached myself onto your all-dignifying grandeur. You yourself know I love you. You know this. Other than you, I want nothing. Connect me to yourself. In the same will, he writes, O sisters and brothers who are battling for the cause all over the world, O those who have assigned your heads as a deposit, Ariyeh, for Allah's sake, and have placed yourselves onto the palms of your hand, yearning to trade it in the bazaar of lovemaking, be attentive to the fact that the Islamic Republic is the center of Islam and Shiism. The central headquarters of Hussein ibn Ali is Iran. Acknowledge that the Islamic Republic is a haram, and if this haram persists, other harams will remain. But if the enemy were to get rid of this haram, no other haram will remain, neither the Ibrahimi Haramain nor the Muhammadi Haramain. And finally, in another speech of his, he said, one of the dimensions and aspects to ending one's life with a good fate, aqibat bikhairi, is your relation with the Islamic Republic and revolution. Wallah, 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 amongst the most important aspects to ending with a good fate is, then he repeats again, wallah, 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 amongst the most important dimensions to ending with a good fate is our heart's connection, a haqiqi connection with this wise sage who is today holding the reins of the revolution, and we shall see this in the hereafter. وصلى الله على محمد وعلى طاهرين.